Okay, it's just at 3 o'clock now, so I can start today's class. And somebody did ask me today that, can you please talk about something, a concept in meditation? This is quite a refined concept called the outflowings of the mind. It's a very powerful concept in Buddhism. And what that actually is whenever you are meditating, especially, you can see there's a force which tries to take you out of the moment, out from where you are, pushing you away from this moment, away from silence, away from the breath, whatever you're watching, always pushing you away. We call that sort of the outflowings of the mind. And that particular force stops you becoming still. You can imagine if the point of meditation is like getting the mind to be still in one place, and letting that mind stillness settle, deepen, solidify. These outflowings are just, you know, take you out all over the place. It's just like, you know, a kid sitting at home. You can never sit still, always want to go over here, over there, anywhere but where you're actually sitting. And we call that sort of the outflowings of the mind. It's one of the ways of looking at restlessness when you start meditating. You start to think, oh, I got the sound, didn't we? Last night we had the, oh no, just getting some chairs. On a Friday night when we do a talk, the sound of this microphone goes into the other room. So sometimes those on the introductory to meditation class can also hear my my talk as well. That's what Dennis was coming in for, just getting a few seats. So that outflowings of the mind, which moves the mind from where you are sitting or where you are to somewhere else, is one of the great causes of restlessness. It's one of those things we have to somehow resist, somehow to let go of, sometimes to subdue until the mind is sitting down and doesn't want to go anywhere. And I mention this because at first it does require a little bit of subduing, a little bit of effort, a little bit of saying no, which is why when we start meditating, we sit down and we actually tell our mind what it's supposed to be doing. We just set the parameters. This is where what we want to do for the next half an hour. And what that really means is that we come here, we sit down in one particular space, in our seats, we tell the mind, this is our meditation time. It's not the time to sort of start thinking, planning, remembering. So we actually tell our mind not to go away, not to go out, not to wander off. When we actually tell our mind to do these things, I've called it in my meditation retreats programming mindfulness. It's giving those instructions, not complicated instructions, not repeated instructions, simple instructions said once or twice in such a way that the mind understands, it's clear, it's precise, and you'll be quite surprised that once you make those suggestions clearly precise, your mind will actually behave. Just like any other being, you train that being, you train a dog, you train a cat, you train anybody, your children, sometimes some wives train their husbands, or whatever it is you train to be able to, for this particular case, for your mind to stay still. And we do that just by telling the mind at the very beginning, this is our meditation time, not the time to go out. Because you can see, just go around thinking of your family, of your work, of your health, of your house, of your work, whatever it is you're doing. When you send the mind out from this job of meditation, there's no possibility of becoming peaceful, becoming free. So that's first of all, to stop those outflowings of the mind, we just have to instruct our mind exactly what we want it to do. And don't forget to do that when you meditate, because sometimes you sit down, especially if you've meditated many, many times, you sit down and you know, you just let the mind just do whatever it wants without any instructions. It's okay to let the mind go, but give it some instructions, give it some parameters, and you'll find the mind will happily stay within those parameters and it will just become nice and peaceful. So that's the first thing, actually give yourself some instructions, simple instructions at the very beginning of the meditation. Then number two, you'll find that, you know, first of all, I ask you to sit down and make the body nice and comfortable. When the body is nice and comfortable, that stops the mind going out to the body. Because if you look at the mind and if you imagine the mind to be inside of you, if that mind goes out to your body, you know, itching, scratching, whatever else you are doing, fidgeting, you find again you can never get any peace or any stillness. When the body is moving, the mind will also start to move as well, which means you can't get any stillness or any peace. So to stop the mind going out onto your body, we just make it very comfortable first of all. We make it comfortable, relaxed, at ease. We call that contentment of the body. I think you understand what I mean. If your body is aching, it's itching, it's too hot, it's too cold, you're tired, it's very hard to be still. But when you get into a beautiful posture, it's comfortable, relaxed, you feel good, there's not too many aches and pains, that comfort in the body leads to a sense of contentment which stops the mind wandering off. You don't need to scratch, you don't need to cough, you don't need to adjust the body, you don't need to fidget. The mind doesn't go out to do those things. Which is why in meditation I teach you every Saturday, I've put a lot of emphasis, spending at least 5 minutes just relaxing and making the body comfortable. And then you can actually, instead of going out into your body, you tend to find yourself going in, into the center of the body where your mind lives. I don't mean physically, I mean metaphorically, you know, right in. And the going in is the opposite of these, you know, what we call the aswas, these outflowings of the mind. If you stop those outflowings, you stay still, you go in the opposite direction, which is going inwards. Which is why that sometimes we call meditation centering ourselves. And you can see centering is the opposite of going out, it's going in. So you go in to the body. And then the next thing you notice, your mind. That mind can be very, very restless itself, always going out into the past or the future. So we call it centering in time. And you can notice, you know, as you start to center in time, again, the mind wants to go off into the future. What are you going to do next when you leave here? All the jobs you have to do later on this afternoon. Where are you going to go tonight? What are you going to do tomorrow? It's a long weekend. What are you going to do on Monday, Tuesday, next week, next year? That is the outflowing of the mind, going out from where it lives, which is in this moment. Or going out in the opposite direction to the past. Now, your past is endless. And please don't follow that myth that by thinking of the past, you can deal with it all. The path is an endless, endless, endless thing. Sometimes, you know what it's like, sometimes you're sorting out a cupboard, you're sorting out old photographs, and sometimes it's going to take forever. So instead of like sorting it all out, you just get the whole lot and put it in the bin, and it's taken away by the recycling people, and then you're free of it. It's all done. It's finished. So that's one of the nicest things. The past is just so big, huge, you can't deal with it all. So it's much nicer just to throw it all away, especially in meditation. So don't allow the mind to go out to the past or out to the future. Keep it in the center of time. And understand what the center of time is. I think you understand what I mean. It's right now, this very present moment. Centering. And when you find your mind going off to the future or the past, that's the outflowings. Now, why does it do that? And again, just the same way that I said, if your body is nice and comfortable and at ease, you have this contentment of the body, then your mind doesn't go out to sort of scratch, to fidget. The same way that if your mind can be in the center of time and can find some ease and some comfort there, where it's relaxed in the moment, then you find it doesn't go out to the past or the future. It doesn't need to. The reason why those outflowings happen is because of discontent. You're not happy enough in the moment. Which is another reason why, to get that happiness in the moment, we use what we call like kindness. Be kind to this moment. It's not the best. This hall could be better. We could have thicker underfelt on the carpets. The chairs could be more comfortable. We could have like these lazy boys for every person who sits down in this hall. We could have personal air conditioning, and a little tube which falls from the roof, and you can get your specific temperature. You know, we could actually get these chairs where you can move back or move forward or to the left or the right just to support your body perfectly. We could have these meditation cushions. You can just press a button and it warms up if your bottom is too cold or if it cools. If it's, you know, I've been to, those of you who've been to Japan and seen these high-tech toilets which they have, Even the seat gets warmed up, press the right button, you get the right temperature to sit on. Now imagine you had one of those, well, a bit softer than those, for your meditation chest. You can imagine that, yeah, you can always get it more comfortable, but that is endless. So instead, we just are content with what we have in this moment. What we're doing there to get that contentment, remember, contentment stops the outflowings. To arrive at that contentment, we remember another powerful perception in Buddhist meditation, which is called no-fault finding. Because as soon as you find fault with the present moment, and there's plenty of faults there, as soon as you look for finding faults, you can't stay in this moment. It's not good enough. You want to fix it up, change it, alter it. But the fault-finding mind is not a true mind. It's not a wise mind. Instead of a fault-finding mind, which is very negative, we have a mind of gratitude, of appreciation, which is what kindness really is. If you look at your partner, you can always find heaps and heaps of faults in him or her. And there's no way you can have a nice relationship that way. If you have a relationship of kindness, compassion, then it doesn't see the faults. It accepts them, and it just sees all the other beautiful qualities, which means you can stay with that person. Fault-finding creates discontent, and discontent creates these outflowings. You just move out. You go somewhere else. So in this mind, when present moment, instead of fault-finding, seeing all the things wrong with it, you see all the things right with it. A sense of appreciation, of kindness. Oh, this is good enough. This is fine. I can love this moment. This is wonderful. Thank you for being here. And one of the ways of doing that, again, from the teaching of the Buddha, is just realizing that you're actually here and you don't have to do anything. You're not at work. You're not at home. You're not driving through the traffic. You're not in hospital. You're not in school. You're just free. It's deliberately appreciating the fact that I can meditate. I've got 45 minutes, especially for me, and no one's going to ask me a question in those 45 minutes. After I just stop talking during the meditation, at last I can rest my mouth. I can just sit and enjoy myself. So whenever I meditate, that's what I think, and think, wow, isn't it wonderful? This is a holiday. I'm appreciating it. How many of you, when you go on holiday, take your iPhone and just check your emails and do all your work and take all the stuff which you're supposed to be leaving behind? That's why you go on holidays. Do you take all that work with you when you go on holiday? Don't be crazy. So the same when you meditate. Don't take work with you when you close your eyes and sit and meditate. Leave all that behind. Leave all the fault-finding and have this beautiful mind of compassion. This is good enough. And if you have that low fault-finding, instead of appreciation, gratitude, kindness to this moment, you develop contentment. And with contentment, the mind doesn't want to go anywhere else. It doesn't go out to the past. It doesn't go out to the future. It doesn't go out to the verbal function of the mind, the thinking, the naming, the conversation. That too is an outflowing of the mind. That's why that sometimes they call it verbal diarrhea. But this is what happens when you've got your mouth closed, but still the same sort of stuff is happening between your ears. Just thoughts go on and on and on. It is like diarrhea because it just keeps on coming out and out and out and out and out and out and doesn't stop. And so that sort of diarrhea, why does it come out anyway? Why do you think so much? Why do you worry so much? And the point is because you're not content in the silence. Too many fault-finding, too much business, too many things to be done. It's an outflowing of the mind. Can you imagine keeping all that energy inside? So the thinking takes off a lot of mental energy. As many of you know, when you've been thinking very much, you feel just worn out. When you've had a hard day at work, when you've had to make many decisions and sort out many problems, it's just so tiring. Imagine that energy is not wasted. It doesn't leave. It doesn't go out from your body, but stays inside. You get enormously strong, powerful, energetic states of mind. So don't allow the energy to go out. Keep it in this moment and in the silence so the mind doesn't go out into thinking. And as it goes deeper, you can take it deeper into the next stage, every time I talk about meditation, the breathing. So to focus it inside, you use this meditation object of the breath, just knowing the breath, being the breath, and feeling the sensation of the breath as it goes into your body and out of your body. And stay in that little area of just breath perception. So everything else, you don't go out to everything else, you stay with the breath. Now, it might happen that somebody may cough, there may be the dogs bark next door, or somebody starts their lawnmower, or all these other distractions. Don't let the mind go out to those distractions. Stay focused on your breath. That's your home. That's where we're abiding. And so if you do hear these other noises or distractions, they're out there somewhere. You don't go out to them. You can hear them, but you don't send the mind out to them. You don't send your mind out to the sounds. You don't send them out to the distractions. You keep it still inside. Keep it in. Don't let it go out. Just like keeping sort of the dog inside the house so it doesn't wander out and get into all sorts of mischief. Always keep it in. And as you keep it in, you're going away from these outflowings. And as you go in, you find out that you're content with the breath becomes delightful, and you even go in to the breath. Instead of going outwards, you're going in. And as you go into the breath, that's where you find the delightful breath. And for those of you who've done this meditation deeper, you go actually into the next stage. The breath disappears. You go in where you can't feel the breath. You get these beautiful lights we call the nimittas. These incredible, wonderful visions inside the mind of beautiful lights. And if you really want to take this meditation further, just go into them. Don't go out from them. Because the only reason you go out again is because you're not content with whatever's happening. Contentment means you don't do anything. Contentment means there's no faults which you can see, so you just leave it alone. If whatever happens, oh, this is good enough. No, I'm not going to control these things. It's not as if I have any power over these things anyway. I'll just let them go, let them be, just let them exist without doing anything. Because contentment leads to a stillness of the will. So you're not disturbing the process. And then you find you continue to go in. In meditation, you first of all, you have to stop that tendency which we developed in life. You're in your car and you're looking outside the window. You're in your home and you're looking for what you want to do next. As if you're always inside but looking out the window at what's going on outside rather than what's going on inside. So instead of, this metaphor of being in a room and looking out of the window, we're in a room and we look inside the room, not out the window. We're in the moment, we look in the moment, we don't look out to the past or the future. We're in the silence, we don't look out into the words. We're in the breath, we don't look out to all those other distractions. We're in this nimitta, we just look inside the nimitta rather than look outside. Always looking in. And you find that becomes a part of meditation. Always going in. Never going on. Even those of you who've read all these books and say, this is one stage of meditation, this is the next stage of meditation, then the next stage of meditation. Even that is these outflowings of the mind. You go out onto the next stage, out onto the next stage, out onto the next stage. Always going out. On. And that's our life sometimes. Always going on to the next thing. Always going outwards. Never staying home. Never finding any peace. Never knowing stillness. And that's the problem with the asavas. We have to keep it inside. Okay, so that's a quick sort of talk about these outflowings of the mind for one of the members here who asked me to talk about that. But now, again, anyone here for the introduction to meditation class, this is the, for those who haven't meditated before, that's why I gave a deeper sort of aspect of meditation. This is the deeper understandings of how meditation works. For those coming for the beginners classes, introduction to meditation class, that's in the room to my right. This is the ongoing class. Okay, so having given that little bit of an instruction, if you'd like to get yourselves comfortable again, if you can have a stretch if you want to, a scratch, adjust your legs, whatever. And in 1 minute, we can actually start today's meditation class. So when you're ready, you close your eyes. And bring attention inwards into your body. So you know how the mind goes outside of this room, outside of this suburb, even sometimes outside of this country. Keep it in. Bring it in. And remind yourself that this time, this 40, 45 minutes, we're dedicating to meditation, to stillness, to peace, to relaxation of the body and the mind. This is not the time for working out all your problems or doing your business. Reminding you of that stops the mind going out to those things. It sets parameters to guide your meditation for the next 40 minutes. And as you bring your mind inside, into your body, just notice any sensations in your body, especially the most prominent sensation. That's usually an ache or an irritation, which could turn into a full-fledged pain later on. So instead of just letting it just develop into a big distraction for you, adjust your body now. Fidget, scratch, cough, whatever you need to do. Loosen your belt or bits of clothing so your body is really as comfortable as you possibly can make it. Be kind to your body. stay inside your body, not going out. Once the body is very comfortable, or as comfortable as you can, when you get to the stage of contentment of your body, you can sit here and it's not demanding too much of you. Then leave it alone. And as you come to your mind inside your body, notice how the mind has a tendency to go out into the future and out into the past. And instead, center your mind in the middle of time. Sometimes I look at the time like this street, and I can look down the street from where I've come from, and I can look up the street to where I'm going, but I don't do either. Instead, I look where I am in this moment, right now. Or like the other simile, you're in a house, and you don't look through the two windows to the past or look through the window to the future. You look what's in your house, where you are, the room of the present moment. And have some kindness to this moment, to look in the room of now without a fault-finding mind, to appreciate it may not be the best, but it's more than good enough for resting. Start letting the mind go out from the present moment. Just keeping it inside the now, until it starts to appreciate the peace and the contentment and the sense of ease, just being in the present moment. Not wanting anything else. If you want something more, you can't enjoy what you have. coming into the silence. And don't let the mind leak and go out into thinking. Keep it inside. Going into the breathing, just to know the breath. How you know the breath, it doesn't matter, as long as you know breathing. Now that's your home, the breath. Stay inside it. Imagining the breath like a car, and you're sitting inside. Don't leave. Don't even look through the windows. Look inside. coming close to the end of the meditation, how do you feel? How deep in have you gone? And what happens when you don't let your mind go wandering with that outward force called the outflowings? What happens when you resist that and go in the opposite direction? I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times to end the meditation. Please listen to every sound from the gong. And when a third ringing from the gong vanishes, that's a signal to come out from your meditation. The third ringing of the gong. There we go. So on this meditation today, I emphasize what you can recognize in your meditation is that force which pushes the mind outside, the outflowings, and how to resist that, and what happens when you don't follow the mind going outwards, but you keep it at home and allow to go inwards, using similes like being in a room and not looking out the windows but looking inside the room, finding contentment in that room so you can really have a place where you can rest. Only when you can rest can you find some peace. Only when you find peace you find stillness. When you have stillness, the meditation really starts to develop. And one of the things I often say in the meditation, when you do keep the mind still, you get all this energy and happiness, a sense of inner power, which is what happens when you keep going inwards. And for those of you busy in your life, at work, at university or wherever, that power you can really make use of. Go in, get the mind very, very still and powerful. And whatever you do, you can actually perform to a very, very high standard. You've got this energy, this power, simply because you know how to keep the mind still, to go inwards, never to go outwards. Centering, going in. Okay, has anyone got any comments or questions about the meditation today? Oh yeah, thank you, Ron. Yeah. Okay, yes, an excellent question. You said in a meditation, I did state that when you are a certain time in the guided meditation, let the body go, and now you can go on to the mind. And does that take a sense of willpower? The answer is yes. A sense of decision-making, you choose not to do things. But you were saying that you just let this happen naturally without any willpower. You just watch the body, and after a while, it just the attention goes to the breath. And that becomes your center. The way you described it is superior than the way I described it. And that's basically what I do most of the time. I don't, till now, my body just let it go and just go off to the breath. It just happens naturally. And that's by far the best way. However, in a guided meditation, I have to give some instructions, guidelines. And so to encourage meditators, there is a time when just the body just is let go of. You don't concern yourself about it anymore. But the best way, if you can really do it, if you've been meditating a long time, Rodney, so you know you should get to understand how it's done now. The best way is just to sit here and absolutely do nothing. And because you don't do anything, naturally you go in. So the best way is just to put these guards on the mind, say, come on, shh, just stay in this moment, stay still, shh, and don't do anything. And then you tend to always go inwards and inwards and inwards and inwards. That's just what happens naturally. So, from what I understood from your question, so the way you do your meditation is the best. Let's see. That's the Rolls Royce option. Okay. At that point, it's using a metaphor of, you know, the mind being inside the body somewhere. It's not inside the body somewhere, but this body takes most of your attention. And this is almost like when, so this body disappears. Then you're aware of the thinking, the planning, sort of the internal operator, you know, of your life. Not sort of the physical vehicle, but almost like, similarly like the driver of a car compared to the vehicle you're driving. So the mind is like the driver, the body is its vehicle. Some of you have got Rolls Royce bodies, some of you have got old bombs of bodies. But you know, it's the driver is the most important. Even if you've got an old bomb of a body, sometimes you get a really good driver. Yeah, when there's no thinking, and by thinking I mean like the verbalizing, the descriptions which go on in the mind. Because I know that people have been very confused. What do you mean by thinking? Does it mean we don't know anything, that our mind is totally blank and dull and unconscious? But the no thinking, the silence of the mind, is just when there is no word spoken inside. It's a knowing without the labels. And I've often tried to demonstrate that with, you know, that old simile of the space between the words simile. I've done that many times, I'm not going to repeat it again here. But when there is a gap between the words, and you're aware, but there's no verbalization going on inside. That's like a silent awareness, a non-reactive awareness. You know, but not giving anything a name. You're not starting a conversation with life. That's what I mean by the silence. And that happens quite naturally. And very often people don't realize they actually they spend a lot of time in silence. But because they don't recognize it's not pointed out to them, they don't realize it. That's the silence of the mind. You just go in. And there it is. Does that explain it okay? Okay. Yes.
Yes.
Not quite, because the thinking, the verbalization of the mind, that stops quite early in the meditation path. By the time one gets into jhana, the mind is not moving at all. So not even subverbally, the mind is very, very, very still. No. No, it cannot move. This is very, very clear. It's in even the first jhana. And please read my descriptions of that first jhana, which are in the Mindfulness Bliss and Beyond book. In the first jhana, these are very powerful states of mind where you can't even feel the body, you can't hear any sounds, you can't sort of feel your body. If somebody touched you, you would not be able to notice it. It's called vivicheva kamehi, when the five senses are totally removed from you. You're aloof from it. And so there's no possibility of feeling the body or hearing sounds. It's gone so deep inside, you can't do that anymore. And the mind is so still that even in the first jhana, there is no verbalization going on. It's a subverbal movement of the mind onto the object and away from the object, which is the vitakka vichara. And in the second jhana, even that stops. It's perfect stillness. That's the piti sukha samadhi jhana. Oh, when you come out of it. When you emerge from these jhana states, then again the mind is just so powerful, so still. The mind can verbalize, it can think if it wants to. But a lot of time it prefers not to when you emerge from a deep meditation. Simply because the whole idea of thinking is just such a disturbance. And it's not thinking, it's seeing, because as many of you would know, that the thinking is just using your old language to describe. It's all those words, we learn them at school. What a man is, what a house is, what a tree is, what a dog is. But that word is much different than the reality. There's an old sort of insight, sort of demonstration. I hold up something, and I just happen to hold this up. And you ask, what is this? What is this? Who can tell me what this is? Any suggestions? Yeah, what else? What else? Yes, keep going. Yeah, anything else? Now, of course, all those words, stick, piece of wood, whatever, those are the words. That's not what this actually is. That's just only a fraction of what it is. So in this little exercise, you pick up something and you get all the words. And once the words stop, then you've got more of a chance of seeing what it truly is. And this is the trouble with the words. The words are just so limiting. And if I look at you, I might think, like, girl, sort of woman, that's not who you are. That's just a sort of external label. So the thinking of words just misses the point, misses what it is. And eventually you start looking at this and still all the words are gone. And then instead of seeing the words, you start to see the thing. That old simile Taoism, which I keep bringing up, because it's a beautiful simile of the student who got into trouble because when he saw a sunset, he said, what a beautiful sunset. And he got into trouble for that because he was going on a walk with the master, he was supposed to be silent. And when they asked the master to explain, he said, when that student said, what a beautiful sunset, he wasn't watching the sunset anymore, he was only watching the words. It's a beautiful little story. Because if you think, what a beautiful sunset, you're not watching the sunset, you're watching the words, the description, which is one level away from truth. So it's great when you actually see a sunset. Don't start thinking. Because then you're just enjoying the words, the description, you're not enjoying the thing. Yeah, come back, yeah. Ah. No, have a look at the teachings of the Buddha. I refer you to Arana Vibhanga Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya. Arana Vibhanga Sutta. There the Buddha describes two different types of pleasures. One to be followed, one not to be followed. The ones not to be followed are the pleasures of the five senses, but the pleasures of the mind. The Buddha said, follow those. Develop them. Do not be afraid of them. Bhavetabhang, nabhayetabhang, asevitabhang, bahulikatabhang. I just say that in Pali to impress people. You don't really know if I'm saying it truly or not, because none of you know Pali, but that's actually what it says. And this is one of the great myths in Buddhism. People think you're not supposed to enjoy anything, otherwise you'll be clinging. And that is actually wrong. Look in Pasadika Sutta of the Digha Nikaya, where the Buddha was saying that if you cling, enjoy, make much of the four jhanas, there's only four results of that. This is enjoying the pleasures of meditation. If you enjoy the pleasures of meditation, the only consequences are the first, second, or third, or fourth stage of enlightenment. Streaming once, returning, non-returning, arahat. This is what happens when you enjoy the pleasures of the mind. Straight from the word of the Buddha. If you doubt, I can show it to you afterwards. Inside what? Yeah? No, if you look at the... He said that the ekayana practice is not only way. That's a very poor translation. Ekayana, eka means one, ayana means going. It's, ask any Pali scholar, the mistake of ekayana. Yana is vehicle, but it doesn't mean yana. It's ayana, it's a going. Have a look in any of the modern translations of the Satipatthana Sutta. And every Satipatthana is preceded by Vinaya Loke Abhijada Manasang, usually translated very poorly as having abandoned grief and covetousness for the world. If you look actually the commentaries in Nepali, you'll see that what that means is having abandoned the five hindrances. That's what that phrase means. That's what you have to do before you do the Satipatthana if you want to get enlightenment. Abandon the five hindrances. And that job is done by the jhanas. The Satipatthana actually includes the jhana practice. The five hindrances are the things we have to abandon in order to develop the seven bojangas are what you develop once the five hindrances are overcome. Five hindrances? Ten. No, there's only five hindrances. No, only five hindrances. Okay, well, people are leaving now. So if you want to come up to discuss further, you're most welcome. So we'll call it a day now. So thank you for coming. If you please come up and we can talk some more if you wish to. And we pay respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha, if you please, before we go. And then we can also depart.